You're listening to the Podcast Network. Listen, learn, evolve.
There's a way, such a better way. Today, today. Raise your voice, tell the world there's a better way. Today, there's a better way. Ooh, there's a way, such a better way. Today, today. Now raise your voice, tell the world there's a better way. Today, there's a better way.
Hi, this is Rod Adams, and it's time for Atomic Show number 125. And today's going to be another one of those different shows where I add in audio clips and thoughts about things that have been kind of troubling me or interesting me in the last week or so. I spent a lot of time this week listening to and watching and cutting and pasting and chopping the testimony of former Vice President Al Gore to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Now, that committee has a lot of impact. It's a very powerful committee that pays attention to America's place in the world and how we relate with other nations. And his invited testimony was the first substantial thing that they discussed in the current congressional session. So it's pretty important. Now, one of the things that kind of intrigued me was that former Vice President Gore was introduced as sort of an elder statesman and as a guy who's gone beyond his public life to show slideshows and educate the public on the very important issue of man's impact on the environment by continued burning of fossil fuels. He's throughout the testimony, his the little placards that come up to show who he is says he's the former vice president from 1993 to 2001, and that he is the founder of an organization called Alliance for Climate Protection. Interestingly enough, though, Senator Gore, Vice President Gore, Mr. Gore, testified in front of Congress, a very important congressional committee, for nearly three full hours. Not once during that entire time was it mentioned that the former vice president is also employed as a venture capitalist. He is a partner with Kleiner Perkins, Caulfield, and Byers, a company that has some very significant investments in alternative energies, including a company called OSRA, which is building a very large solar thermal power plant in the desert southwest. So I want to play a couple of clips that I heard in a row during my drive to work this week. One is a discussion about Senator Gore's or Vice President Gore's testimony in front of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. Good morning. I'm Renee Montaigne. A dozen years ago, Vice President Al Gore returned from Kyoto, Japan, with a climate treaty in hand, and it was already a dead letter. The U.S. Senate, which ratifies treaties, strongly opposed the deal. Yesterday, Al Gore returned to the Senate. This time he offered advice on how to deal with a new climate treaty that will be negotiated this year in Copenhagen.
Let me break in for just a moment. Think about that. The NPR spokesman says that Al Gore has been invited to give advice to the Senate. As that's an elder statesman's role, appropriately enough for a former vice president. However, if someone with significant financial interests has an audience with a bunch of senators, it should rightfully be called lobbying, not giving advice.
NPR's Richard Harris reports.
The federal calendar is packed with pressing business this year. One of the toughest deadlines is to lay the groundwork for the international climate talks in Copenhagen. Massachusetts Democrat John Kerry, who chairs the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, reminded his colleagues the new treaty will be negotiated in December of this year.
That means there is no time to waste. We must learn from the mistakes of Kyoto, and we must make Copenhagen a success.
To help set the tone for that, Kerry invited his old friend and colleague Al Gore in to offer the Senate advice. Gore happily obliged.
As would any businessman worth his salt who wants a few government handouts.
First, he said, the Congress needs to settle on domestic actions that will reduce our own emissions and make us credible on the international scene. That's starting to happen with the stimulus package, and Congress has even bolder plans for later this year.
So now I'm going to cut to another story that came on NPR and in the podcast that I was listening to, which is NPR Environmental. This story came right after the discussion about Gore's testimony in front of Congress. When I heard the stories aligned up, the juxtaposition made me laugh out loud, mainly because I'm such a energy geek that I knew exactly who Ray Lane was as soon as the NPR reporter introduced him.
A Senate committee last night gave the green light to some $31 billion intended to encourage green energy development. The spending would come in the form of incentives and tax credits as part of President Obama's economic stimulus plan. One man who stands to benefit is Ray Lane. He is a Silicon Valley venture capitalist
who happens to be a partner in exactly the same venture capital firm as former Vice President Al Gore.
Lane says it's especially important for alternative energy to get a government boost right now.
Because of the economic decline across the world, the tax equity financing.
Tax equity financing is an enormously complex area of tax law. I'll put a link in the show notes to a document that helps you understand how renewable energy projects use tax equity financing, basically trading on the tax credits that renewable energies can provide to partner up with large profitable companies.
And project financing and even later stage equity financing has dried up. So we have hundreds of wind projects and hundreds of solar projects and tens of transportation projects that will go abandoned if they do not get capital. The only source of that capital today is going to be some help from the federal government.
This is unsubtle foreshadowing. You're going to hear that clip again sometime later in this podcast, so pay attention.
In the form of what?
Loan guarantees would be first. Second would be tax incentives. And then finally, there are outright grants.
Do you have any concerns that given the fact that the federal government has had such a hard time persuading credit markets to thaw out enough to do anything, that they'd be willing to do this, even presented with incentive?
Well, I don't think we have a choice. The whole renewable energy field has the possibility of fulfilling exactly what President Obama wants, and that is to solve multiple problems with a single solution. This will help to burn less foreign oil. It, of course, helps the environment, and it will create new jobs.
Now, President Obama clearly believes that this combining these goals works. What do you think?
I absolutely believe it. I have companies that I'm affiliated with, a solar thermal company that is ready to build projects that are 200, 300, 500 megawatts in size, which create thousands of jobs that will create enormous amounts of energy.
Now, when I heard that description and knowing a little bit about what Kleiner Perkins is invested in, I immediately thought back to when I heard Senator John Kerry say the following during the Senate Foreign Relations discussion with Vice President Gore. And let me set the stage just a little bit more. This is right after Senator Corker from Tennessee had just finished questioning Vice President Gore about his response to nuclear power. I'll be playing that Corker clip about nuclear power later in the show. This is Senator Kerry.
Now, I might just point out to you, I'll just give you this, but we'll put it in the record that with respect to the future plants, last fall, there's a new solar power plant in California that began operating. It used to operate under old technology, but the new technology has empowered it to come back online. And the solar thermal factory for the mirrors is in Las Vegas.
A little inside U.S. politics information. Las Vegas is in Nevada, the home state of Senator Harry Reid, who is the Senate Majority Leader. So mentioning Las Vegas is one way to curry favor with that very powerful politician.
Over the next years, ALSRA is the company that's doing it. They're going to build 2 gigawatts of solar power plants, generating 4,000 construction jobs, 1,000 operational jobs, and clean, green power for over 300,000 American homes. I think that's what Vice President Gore is talking about, and a lot of us. I mean, that's the future.
Okay, so let me bring this home. ALSRA is the solar thermal power company that Ray Lane was talking about, the one that is being funded by Kleiner, Perkins, Caulfield, and Byers, which is, again, the same venture capital company that former Vice President Al Gore is a partner in. So you've got the Senate, you've got the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee inviting in a venture capitalist who is a former colleague, and having him testify in front of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee for nearly 3 hours. And one of the things that's being put into the record is a description of a power project that is being financed by a venture capital company who the former vice president is a partner with. Very interesting turn of progressive politics. Now, you know, I like progressive thought. I believe in the importance of individuals and making a world that can provide opportunity for all, public education, public roads, all kinds of progressive type thoughts. But one of the things I get really upset about is when I have, you know, rich progressives. It's sort of like chicken hawks, you know, people who won't serve themselves, but they want to go to war. Rich progressives are people that won't live with the common people, but they use them to try to cover for what they really want to do, which is to get rich. Anyway, now I'm going to go back and do some other stuff, but I just wanted to pull all that stuff together and see if you can make the same connections I am and follow the money. Again, I don't have anything against progressive politics. What I have is people who are going to the public purse and asking for support for their favorite projects without even acknowledging or disclosing the fact that that's what they're doing.
Sempra Generation put together the largest thin-film solar power plant in North America. It's located in Nevada.
Here's another follow-the-money tip for you. Go do a search on Google for Sempra, Gore, and Kerry. You'll be surprised what you find, or maybe not.
Analysts estimate that it can produce power for less than the cost of traditional electricity. So that's what's staring us in the face, if we will get the grant money and the incentive money and other efforts out there.
Of course, Ray Lane likes that idea. Here's what he had to say as he continued talking to NPR.
One of the things that has always stood in the way of creating alternative energy sources is that the kinds of energy sources we use now are cheap.
Correct. The prices at which we sell electric cars or the prices at which we provide renewable energy from solar or wind must be competitive with current fossil fuel prices. Now, there may be some incentives that help it, but it must compete. Consumers typically will not pay a premium just to go green.
So enough money has to be invested at the front end to create the economies of scale to make price possible.
This is where I see a flawed assumption. I don't think that there's that much room for any more economies of scale to push down the price of wind, solar, geothermal, etc. I, of course, could be wrong.
And so we'll see legislation in the next couple of years to price up burning carbon. So oil and coal will be more expensive. So solar, wind, electric cars will come down and compete favorably with coal and oil prices that will be priced up because they are soiling the environment.
As near as I can tell, the real strategy is to bring down the price of wind and solar through subsidies, and to price up the price of oil, coal, and natural gas so that the cost will meet in the middle. However, that does not mean that wind, solar, and other alternatives are ever going to get cheap. It just means that overall, energy will cost more and be a larger portion of the economy. At least that's the strategy of the people that I'm talking about.
Ray Lane, thank you very much.
Pleasure talking to you.
Ray Lane is a managing partner with the venture capital firm of Kleiner Perkins, Caulfield and Byers in Menlo Park, California.
Now let's go back to see what Al Gore, Ray Lane's partner, has to say about the legislation and the urgency with which it needs to be passed.
Yesterday, Al Gore started selling members of the Senate on the need to act and act fast.
It is truly a great honor and personal privilege to be invited to appear before this committee. Mr. Chairman, I want to compliment you on your longtime leadership on this issue, and thank you and Senator Lugar for the prominence you're bringing to this issue by making it the subject of the very first substantive hearing of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee in 2009. We are here today, of course, to talk about how we as Americans and how the United States of America as part of the global community should address the dangerous and growing threat of the climate crisis. We have arrived at a moment of decision. Our home, Earth, is in danger. What is at risk of being destroyed is not the planet itself, of course, but the conditions that have made it hospitable for human beings. Moreover, we must face up to this urgent and unprecedented threat to the existence of our civilization.
One of the fun things about using modern technology and having a podcast and being able to cut and clip is I get to interrupt people of high prominence like former Vice President Gore. Of course, during the hearing, there was a big gap between that opening remarks, somewhere around, I don't know, minute six or eight or something, and the opportunity that Senator or Vice President Gore's fellow Tennessean had to question him about a burning issue with regard to the prescription for the cure to this crisis. Up until that time, most of the discussion had been talking about biofuels and wind and solar and all this other stuff. And Senator Corker from Tennessee asked a little bit more pertinent question, at least from my admittedly biased point of view.
I just have to ask, so as we look at that and we look at energy production in this country, nuclear, one would have to believe that as we deal with the issue of carbon, that nuclear would have to play a huge role in that. And I just wonder what comments you might have in that regard.
Now, this is an important part of the testimony.
I used to represent Oak Ridge, as you do now, where my constituents were, in those years, immune to the impacts of radiation.
I could be wrong, but I think he's trying to make a joke here.
And so I was very enthusiastic about nuclear power, and I came to the Congress in 1976 as a very strong supporter of nuclear power. I have grown skeptical about the degree to which it will expand. I'm not opposed to it. But there is now in the industry absolutely zero ability to predict with any confidence what the cost of construction is. The nuclear waste storage problem will undoubtedly be solved, but there are other problems. They only come in one size, extra large.
Of course, you all know I'm going to interrupt at that point. As you know, nuclear plants can come in any size the customer wants. And the key is having people who recognize that fission can be controlled from kilowatt size to multi-megawatt size to thousands of megawatt size. It doesn't have to be huge. And there are opportunities to gain scale economies without making enormous single units. The number of units can allow for scale to occur at much smaller sizes. Just look at Hyperion and NuScale and their plans, and, of course, Adams Atomic Engines. Back to Senator Gore, or Vice President Gore. I keep getting that all mixed up. Vice President Gore.
And when utilities have a limited construction budget and an uncertain demand projection, because with the price of oil going up and down and new conservation measures coming in, they fear we might face the kind of situation that we faced in the Tennessee Valley area in the 70s and 80s, where TVA started all these new nuclear plants on an assumption that there was going to be a 7% annual increase in electricity usage, and then the energy crisis dropped it down to 1%. So they canceled all those plants, and the ratepayers are still paying for the unbuilt plants.
But not only are the ratepayers still paying for the unbuilt plants, they're still having to deal with the effects of burning coal and all the plants that TVA kept running because they didn't finish the nuclear plants, like having to deal with spills of billions of gallons of coal ash slurry. In that great period of conservation that Vice President Gore is talking about, we continued to increase the amount of coal we burned. Back in 1974, we were only burning 400 million tons of coal a year to produce electricity in the U.S. Today, it's over a billion tons of coal per year.
The utility executives become allergic to placing large bets on large increments with uncertain construction costs over a long period of time into the future.
But the solution is not to avoid nuclear. The solution is to think about ways to solve that allergy. How can we produce smaller plants with more certain costs that can be built faster? Is it technically possible? You're darn right it is.
And that's why you've had, last year, by far the largest new construction of electricity generation was with renewables. Coal has actually gone down, renewables have gone up, and nuclear has been at kind of a standstill. Now, I think there will be some new nuclear plants, but the proliferation consequences will limit its spread as a worldwide option. If it did expand dramatically, we would run out of fuel in a relatively short order unless we went to reprocessing. And reprocessing makes it hugely more expensive.
I got to interrupt again. I got to try to put a number on that hugely more expensive. The best studies I've seen show that the active reprocessing adds perhaps 1.5 to 2 mils to the cost of electricity. That's 0.15 to 0.2 cents per kilowatt hour. And by the way, that's a product that sells for about 8 to 10 cents a kilowatt hour. In other words, it's decimal dust.
And actually expands the quantity of high-level waste that has to be safely sequestered. That's counterintuitive. I used to think that reprocessing would cut down on the waste. It actually increases the amount of waste and the cost. So for all those reasons, I think that it'll play a small extra role. I don't think it's a silver bullet, and I don't think it'll play a large role.
Well, it may not be a silver bullet, but uranium is a silvery bullet. And plutonium and thorium added together, we've got what we need. We have fuel diversity. We have resource diversity. We have a tremendous variety of plant styles and ways to do it. We can produce most of what we need using fission. You may have heard it here first, but you'll hear it. You will hear it here again. There is an alternative energy source that can replace fossil fuels and do it cheaper, cleaner, and with more reliability. Fortunately, I'm not the only one who disbelieves what Vice President Gore is saying, and some of the people who disbelieve it have a little bit more visibility and access than I do. Here is Senator Johnny Isaacson from the state of Georgia.
I want to return to nuclear. Senator Corker brought it up, and you and I have engaged on this before.
Mm-hmm.
Couple things. From 2000 to 2006, the leading country in the world in carbon reduction was France, 6%. United States, 3%.
On the floor.
The primary difference that I can see is that they generate almost all of their electric energy from nuclear. A couple of things you said I want to just talk about for a second. One is I had always understood, and I stand to be corrected, and I defer to your position. You're probably right, and I'm probably wrong, but I'd always been led to believe that the reprocessing of nuclear fuel, spent fuels for a second use reduced by 90% the storage problem. And you said it was a greater storage problem. So I'm not questioning you. I'm questioning myself. But that's what I've been told.
Well, that was my impression also, Senator Isaacson, until fairly recently. And it is my understanding that that the volume of waste that has to be stored safely actually does increase with reprocessing. The industry has even called it recycling, and it does give the impression that it cuts down on the volume. But the information that I believe is correct, and I, like you, am always open to being corrected on these things.
Well, that's good, because I expect he is going to be corrected, and corrected many times, by some of the same people that he happens to quote during the course of his testimony.
I don't know if it's appropriate to ask a vice president to do this, but if you could ask some of your staff research and get that answer to me, I'd really like to know.
If it's permitted to supplement my response for the record, I'll be happy to do
it. Oh, absolutely.
We'll anytime we can get facts right, I'm always, because as politicians, we sometimes run off with a bad idea.
Better than the alternative.
Yeah. Well, we'll get the committee staff also.
Thank you very much.
Isaacson, a man who has built a business from scratch and knows a thing or two about economics, also challenged Gore on his assertions about why the construction process has stopped in the mid-1970s.
I don't think it's a correct assumption that they made a misassumption on the growth of demand. What in fact happened was that the formation of capital and the cost of servicing it went so great, the cost of the plants went through the roof. Washington State Public Power was paying 15.75% tax-free on those bonds, because that's what happened to that marketplace at that time. Which brings me to a suggestion. I am an advocate of nuclear. I do not think, if you accept every dire circumstance of climate change, and I'm not saying I don't, I'm just saying if you accept every dire circumstance and you take a clean, reliable source of energy that we know works off the table, or you make it so difficult to do it that you can't do it, I don't think you can ever get to the solution you're seeking. But I will tell you this, there. Construction work, while in progress, is a mechanism of financing a power plant by putting it in the rate base and paying cash as you go for a significant part of it that removes the debt service interest component from the cost of a plant and gives you a reliable way to deal with the cost of building those plants. So one of the problems we've had in this country from a standpoint of nuclear since the 1970s was, one, the adverse reaction to Three Mile Island. First of all, I recognize that. Second of all was the cost that blew through the roof in the 1970s, which you mentioned. But Bob is a much better businessman than I am, but there are a lot of ways to skin a cat. And if we have the dire circumstances we're facing, we need to find every way to skin every cat. And I think creative mechanisms of financing and a more open mindset on our part to using safe, reliable, renewable nuclear energy makes a lot of sense. So I apologize for making a little speech.
Senator Isaacson, from the bottom of my heart, please never apologize for making speeches like that. Those are words that senators need to hear, that C-SPAN audience needs to hear, and I'm glad you said them. Let's hear how Vice President Gore responded.
No, I also have appreciated the exchanges that we have had, and as a prelude to providing information for the record, one of the experts on this reprocessing issue is Allison McFarlane at George Mason University.
If y'all want to hear more about what Allison McFarlane knows about recycling used nuclear fuel, you can go listen to the interview that I had with her back in June of 2007. Quite frankly, she's no expert on the subject.
Who is one of the sources of my information that reprocessing increases the overall volume of the waste, but I'll provide her study for the record and any other relevant information.
On your
comment about what happened to TVA in the 70s, I think both things are true. No doubt the construction costs went through the roof. In the fall of 73, the Arab OPEC oil embargo shot energy prices up, and coal shouldn't be tied to oil, you would think, but it is.
Of course there's a relationship between the price of coal and the price of oil. They both produce the same ultimate product, which is usable heat. There are certainly differences in the physical characteristics. One's a solid, one's a liquid. One produces more smoke, one produces less smoke. One can be pumped, one has to be shoveled. But the fact of the matter is they're both heat sources.
coal prices went up, electricity prices went up.
So if the price of electricity goes up, wouldn't that make the a production plant which produces electricity at a low marginal cost more valuable?
And so conservation kicked in, and the cost of construction, as you said, went very high. But it's also true that when they launched their massive program of 21 new reactors, they were projecting a 7% annual increase in electricity demand, and it fell rapidly to 1% per year. And they talked about the decoupling. It used to be one-for-one increases in energy use and economic output, and that was decoupled during that period in the 70s. I don't take nuclear off the table. I'm not a reflexive opponent of nuclear.
No, Mr. Gore doesn't take nuclear off the table. He does what we call in the Navy, damning with faint praise. That means if you don't have the courage to criticize somebody, all you have to do is say they're not terribly good or they're marginally effective or something like that, and you can make their career or kiss their career goodbye. So that's kind of what people like Mr. Gore and Joe Rahm and a few others who accept the fact that nuclear exists do. And the UCS has been doing that forever. They say they're not anti-nuclear, but they fight and scratch and claw and criticize at every chance they can get and talk about the inability of nuclear to be built fast after they've slowed it down as slow as they can get it.
I just don't see any at-risk private dollars going into it because they, you know, France, Areva, their big company there, it's 92% owned by the French government, and 95% of its output goes to the French government.
And the benefits of Areva accrue to the taxpayers of France rather than to some sort of private organization, like the benefits that are being advocated for companies like OSRA and others. I'm not against private capital winning. What I am against is private capital or private people using my capital, taxpayer capital, to get rich.
So, again, the private at-risk dollars, that's what is one indicator of whether the market is really betting on this or not. If it does, fine. We need to solve these problems, but I just don't think it's going to play that much of a bigger role.
Well, I appreciate the response, and I know I don't have any more time. I just respond a little bit on that. What the parameters that the government allows vis-a-vis finance has a lot of difference in whether private capital will chase that type of investment or not. And the lack of belief right now by most private investment that nuclear will be sanctioned by this country in any form or would not be subject to a reaction keeps those dollars from following it. So it's in our interest, both from a financing mechanism as well as from the regulatory side, to develop some level of confidence. The cost of that capital will go down and the formation will expand. But again, thank you very much for your testimony today.
Thank you.
So now you're hearing some of the same voices in your head that I've been hearing since I spent the time listening to this testimony and thinking and cogitating about what these leaders are asking us to do and what they're recommending that we do. If the U.S. government simply got out of the way of new nuclear power plants, they would be built. If the U.S. government simply made the commitment and said nuclear is on the table, it is one of the available options that definitely addresses all of our challenges with regard to climate change and fossil fuel dependence and giving health and comfort to, or wealth and comfort to countries that simply don't like us just because they happen to be sitting on top of a lake of oil, then nuclear would win in the competitive marketplace. It's more concentrated, it's cleaner, it's more reliable, it has an excellent safety record, it's flexible, it can be used to drive at least large vehicles, vessels, it can be used to produce electricity, and it can certainly be used to produce the heat that's used in industrial processes. It's not something that needs huge amounts of direct payments from the taxpayers into private organizations in order to encourage them to do what's right. So I know that sounds kind of absurd, but hey, you got to remember, I am a public servant. I have been trying to do what's right for my career. I have not been somebody out necessarily chasing the dollars. Sure, I left the Navy and tried to go into private business. I have been an ultimate failure at business, came back into the Navy, because I simply could not go out and chase the dollars and make them the primary focus of my life. I really wanted to do things the right way, and I really wanted to make sure that my intellectual capital was shared, not turned into somebody's private property, besides myself, of course. All right. Hope you all have enjoyed this show. It's time for one more appeal, or another appeal for help for the podcast network. TPN needs support in order to keep the servers running, in order to keep the bandwidth flowing, provide the technical support that keeps making sure the podcasts arrive on time. So please go and visit the TPN pledge page. That's tpn.thepodcastnetwork.com/pledge, and give generously, because my friend Cameron Riley is needs some assistance for the hard work that he's doing trying to make independent, non-corporate sponsored media available to people like you. Take care. Goodbye.
There's a way, such a better way. Today, today. Raise your voice, tell the world there's a better way. Today, there's a better way. Ooh, there's a way, such a better way. Today, today. Now raise your voice, tell the world there's a better way. The way is the Adam's way.
You're listening to the Podcast Network. Listen, learn, evolve.